Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivaradhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivaradhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivaradhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivaradhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivratukacharya Asatara Sattasri Srimad Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. His confounder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantukoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sanyavani Paskacharya Sitarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uttam Padakamalam. Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shah Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shah Vanchakalpa Jubhishcha Kipasan Devatap Yitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavya Gunimam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya It's March 12, 2018, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29, Explanation of Devotional Service by Lord Kapila, Text 24. And Ramananda said he's not able to post the Sanskrit up for the conference, so you'll have to find it yourselves. Aham uchava chair dravyai.
Aham uchava chair dravyai.
Kriya yot panayana ke.
Kriya yot panayana ke.
Naiva tusyer chitor chayam.
Naiva tusyer chitor chayam.
Bhuta grama vananina. Aham.
Aham.
I.
Ucha
avachai.
Ucha avachai.
With various.
With various.
Dravyai.
Dravyai.
Paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia.
Kriyaya.
Kriyaya.
By religious rituals.
By religious rituals.
Utpanaya.
Utpanaya.
Accomplished.
Accomplished.
Anagay.
Anagay.
O sinless mother.
O sinless mother.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
Eva.
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 Certainly.
Certainly.
Tushye.
Tushye.
And pleased.
I am pleased.
Architaha. Worshipped.
Worshipped.
Archayam.
Archayam.
In the deity form. Bhutagrama. To other living entities.
To other living entities.
Avamaninaha.
Avamaninaha.
With those who are disrespectful.
Those who are disrespectful.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. Purport. There are 64 different prescriptions for worship of the deity in the temple. There are many items offered to the deity, some valuable and some less valuable. It is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita, if a devotee offers me a small flower, a leaf, some water, or a little fruit, I will accept it. The real purpose is to exhibit one's loving devotion to the Lord. The offerings themselves are secondary. If one has not developed loving devotion to the Lord and simply offers many kinds of foodstuff, fruits and flowers, without real devotion, the offering will not be accepted by the Lord. We cannot bribe the personality of Godhead. He is so great that our bribery has no value. Nor has he any scarcity. Since he is full in himself, what can we offer him? Everything is produced by him. We simply offer to show our love and gratitude to the Lord. The gratitude and love for God is exhibited by a pure devotee who knows that the Lord lives in every living entity. As such, temple worship necessarily includes distribution of prasadam. It is not that one should create a temple in his private apartment or private room, offer something to the Lord, and then eat. Of course, that is better than simply cooking foodstuffs and eating without understanding one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. People who act in this manner are just like animals. But the devotee who wants to elevate himself to the higher level of understanding must know that the Lord is present in every living entity. And, as stated in the previous verse, one should be compassionate to other living entities. The devotee should worship the Supreme Lord, be friendly to persons who are on the same level, and be compassionate to the ignorant. One should exhibit his compassion for ignorant living entities by distributing prasadam. Distribution of prasadam to the ignorant masses of people is essential for persons who make offerings to the personality of Godhead. Real love and devotion is accepted by the Lord. Many valuable foodstuffs may be presented to a person, but if the person is not hungry, all such offerings are useless for him. Similarly, we may offer many valuable items to the deity, but if we have no real sense of devotion and no real sense of the Lord's presence everywhere, then we are lacking in devotional service. In such a state of ignorance, we cannot offer anything acceptable to the Lord. Aham ucha vachaya javyai kritya yot panayang agke naiva tusyar chitor chayam bhutagram avanamina. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of the deities in the temple. So this is our basic principle of bhakti. Patram pushpam palam twayam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmanaha. That whatever we offer should be with love. I really like it here where Prabhupada says hungry people aren't going to be happy no matter how, people who aren't hungry aren't going to be happy with even the best food, right? Unless you have an eating disorder or something. If you're not hungry, even your favorite food, even the best food, is not interesting. And how does Krishna feel hungry? He feels hungry when somebody loves him. That love makes him, is what makes him hungry in a, you know, transcendent sense. He's not hungry in the sense of requiring food or any of it. I mean, Prabhupada's talking specifically about food. Lord Kapildev is speaking about worship in general. So the Lord's not, he's not in need of anything. He's not hungry for our food offerings. He's not in darkness that he needs a lamp. He doesn't have some bad smell for which he needs incense. You know, he doesn't have some lack of beauty. He doesn't have some kind of Spartan environment for which he needs flowers. He doesn't have lack of raiment for which he needs clothes. He doesn't have lack of beautiful sounds for which he needs prayers. He doesn't have an empty belly for which he needs food and water. I mean, what is it that we're, you know, he's got plenty of peacocks. He doesn't need our peacock feather. So what is it that makes him feel hungry? It's love. And, you know, we as the Spartan parcels are like this also. That if somebody loves us, you know, my godbrother Gopa Vrindapal was saying how when one of his sons was around, I don't know, some young child, he brought his father a stick. "Your daddy, here's a stick I found." And Gopa Vrindapal Prabhu was saying that in that moment he had some understanding of how Krishna really appreciates and relishes gifts offered with love, even though the gift itself has very little significance. I mean, you know, here we are. We're in the material world, you know. What are we offering? Everything we're offering is more or less rotten. And then we're on the lowest of the middle planets. I mean, it's not even a very high-class planet, materially speaking. And what do we have to offer? You know, it's an offense to offer flowers without a fragrance, but, you know, I'd say half to three-quarters of the flowers offered in ISKCON temples don't have any fragrance. And sometimes the fragrance is kind of even weird, like, you know, chrysanthemums have sort of a strange fragrance. I don't think anybody would wear chrysanthemum perfume. But many times in the winter, it's all you got, you know. Some kind of rotting mums to offer. Or marigold. I mean, it's not such a nice fragrance. It's kind of hard to always get things like jasmine and gardenias and lang lang, things like that. Lotuses, roses. And most of the roses that are grown today don't have any fragrance. But this is what we have, you know. That's what we have. When I recently came back to Hawaii after being gone for about 6-7 weeks, we have planted all these fragrant flowering bushes and trees around the property, and none of them had any flowers, not one of them. You know, it was just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And within about 3 days of my getting back, they were all blooming. It's like they knew, now we get to be offered to Giriraj again, and we should bloom. But anyway, what do we have to offer, you know? I mean, really. And even if you're on Brahma's planet and you're making an offering, I'm sure that even Brahma's planet compared to Vaikuntha Goloka, it's nothing. So Krishna's induced by the love, you know. With the love, he'll eat banana peels. It's a question of love. And we must say, okay, all this talk of love, 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 you know. What is it? How do I know I have any love? I reminded that story of Sridhar Kirti with Srila Prabhupada. You know, he was traveling with Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada would land at an airport, all these devotees are greeting him, you know, jumping up and down with enthusiasm. And Sridhar Kirti's feeling, you know, I'm not into that. It's not my thing. You know, jumping up and down. Prabhupada, Prabhupada. So he was thinking, well, maybe I just don't really love Prabhupada the way my godbrothers and godsisters do. So he brought this up to Prabhupada at his midday massage. Prabhupada, you know, I don't know if I love you the way your other disciples do. And Prabhupada didn't answer. And so Sridhar Kirti was thinking, oh boy, you know, I hurt his feelings, you know. So then in the evening when he was massaging Prabhupada's feet, Prabhupada said, "Do you enjoy your service?" He said, "Oh yes, Prabhupada, very much." He said, "That is love." So here we have, in this purport and in the verse, a very practical way of showing love. I find it fascinating that, you know, in the verse there's no mention specifically of love. He's just saying, if you do all the deity worship properly, but you're disrespectful, which Prabhupada translates as your ignorance of my presence. I mean, what Lord Kapiladeva says specifically, if you disrespect manina, avamanina, you don't have respect for other living entities, then I'm certainly not pleased. It's na eva tushye. I'm certainly not tushye. I don't find any satisfaction. And Srila Prabhupada takes this point and relates it to love. And so this is, and he gives a very practical item of how we can show this respect to all living entities. So Prabhupada says here that in the purport that our offerings are secondary. He said the offerings themselves are secondary. We must have love. And how can we practically show love according to Lord Kapila? So the offerings are secondary. Now, the fact that the offerings are secondary doesn't mean that they can be whimsical. We still have to offer according to Shastra. You can't say, well, the offerings are secondary, so, you know, I can offer meat, fish, and eggs, or, we have to also offer the items and that Krishna wants in the way that Krishna wants. The regulations coming from the Shastra are ultimately coming from the Lord. Just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Sanatana Goswami instructions about Archana, which then Sanatana Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami wrote up in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And Mahaprabhu also gave instructions to Rupa Goswami, which he wrote up in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So these instructions from Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, that are coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are evidence as to, even in these secondary things, what the Lord likes. And again, such things are true also for us. You know, if I have somebody doing something for me, certainly I want to be able to trust that they care about me. You know, even if you have a paid servant, you still want to know that they have your interest in mind. You don't want them to be doing it wholly and solely for the money. I mean, Srila Prabhupada talks about how the servants in this world, there's no love because they're doing it for the money, and if the money stops, they would stop the service. But even if the money stops, they would stop the service, they might still have some affection for you. I mean, remember my aunt and uncle had a butler who lived with them his whole life. And when he became elderly, they arranged for him to go into a, you know, proper facility. And they would visit him all the time. And they considered him a member of a family. So there's some affection, even if someone's being paid. You want to know that somebody cares about you. But you also want them to do things the way that you like. You know, you may want your sheets folded a certain way, or you want certain kinds of food prepared in a certain way. You know, I had an incident many years ago in India where I got, you know, India sick, and so I was only eating like rice and yogurt and bananas, and the person who was getting me food brought me pakoras, and I said, I can't eat pakoras. The person said, well, you know, it pains me to see you eating just rice and yogurt and bananas. And I'm like, you know, I'm not eating to pain you or make you happy. I'm eating for my own needs. So, you know, you want the person who serves you to just give you the things that you want. Like Prabhupada said, if the guru asks for water, you don't say, well, milk is better, I'm going to bring milk. And this problem with people offering milk when you say you want water is quite pervasive. You know, I find it that it's very common where somebody says, I want to offer service, but they don't want to offer service in the way that you want them to offer service. You know, when I travel someplace, so I have, you know, a little wheeled suitcase, and it's not a particularly fancy or expensive suitcase, but it's not so easy to find. It's one of the lightest weight suitcases that exist, but it seems that you can only buy them in the UK. It doesn't seem that they sell them anyplace else, even though it's by Samsonite, it's an international company, but they just don't sell them out of the UK. And I really like it. I haven't found anything that's as lightweight, and it's also a really nice size. But, you know, if you pick it up by the rolling handle, you can easily break it. You got to pick it up by the other handle. So when I arrive someplace, people will say, can I help you with your luggage? And I'm like, no. It's rolling, you know, I don't need any help with it. And I see when other people help me with it, they'll damage it. You know, it happens all the time. And so you have to say, hey, I'd rather do it myself. And I've had people try to physically wrestle my bag away from me, literally. Just try to, like, grab it out of my hands and wrestle it out of my hands. And, you know, let me serve you, let me serve you. And it's like, that's not service. So the secondary things are not unimportant. It's not that because they're secondary, we can do something whimsical in the name of service. Prabhupada makes this point in the Bhagavad Gita. And the other interesting thing about the so-called secondary things, what Prabhupada's saying here is secondary things, is that behavior itself can change our attitude. And this fact is very much emphasized by modern scholars of psychology and sociology, that when you change your habits, it can change your mentality. You know, Prabhupada talks about thinking, feeling, and willing, and it's really a combined system. What you think about, what we think about changes our emotions and our behavior. Our emotions change our thoughts and our behavior, and our behavior changes our thoughts and emotions also. And the principle of Vaidhi Bhakti is that you do the right behavior, which will spark the right thoughts and emotions. And particularly, again, in modern psychology, it's recognized that there are certain key habits. One of them is exercise. So if a person starts regular exercise, then they're far more likely to have the exercise be a catalyst for eating right, giving up drinking and smoking, and just take, you know, if you find that one key habit, then all of the things start getting affected by it, and your mood starts changing. So the sadhana given to us by the acharyas, by the Lord himself, has that effect, at least eventually. At least eventually. That if you do the sadhana long enough, even though it's just secondary, and even though you may not have the feelings, just like Prabhupada says in the second paragraph, you know, he says that, okay, the point isn't just that you have your own little temple and your own house and you make offerings and you eat them. And you read this and go, oh, no. Right? When Prabhupada says, it is not that once you create a temple in his private apartment or private room, offer something to the Lord and then eat. What a sentence, right? And I'm thinking, I do that every day, Srila Prabhupada. Just imagine the danger of taking a sentence out of context. Someone takes a sentence out of this purport and publicizes it, and everybody stops offering their food at home to their deities. Hare Krishna. So by doing that, of course, Prabhupada qualifies this in the next. He says, it's better than just cooking foodstuffs, eating without understanding one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. But the point is that when you do have a temple at home and you offer your food and then you eat it, that behavior can be a keystone behavior that then starts sending ripples out through the rest of your life and starts changing you in other ways. So again, the secondary things cannot be changed, they cannot be neglected, and they lead to the primary things. That's the whole idea of Vaidhi Bhakti leading to Raganuga Bhakti. All right, now Prabhupada's main point here in the purport is that the secondary items really gain meaning when they're mixed with love and affection, with love and devotion, with love and gratitude. He uses this love and gratitude. End of first paragraph, he says love and gratitude. Beginning of second paragraph, he says gratitude and love. So that our offerings, our worship, have to be mixed with both love and gratitude in order for the Lord to be hungry enough to accept them, not just the food, but the other, all the items of worship. And then, you know, what does this mean, love and gratitude? So we can look, first of all, at these things as emotions, something that we feel. Something that we feel. We feel love. What does love mean? I mean, that's such a difficult topic. Practically the whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Ujjvala Nilamani are dedicated to what does love of God mean? And these are not short books. And they've been extensively commented on. So we can understand love as meaning that you find someone attractive. Krishna is the all-attractive. That you're attracted to Krishna. Love means you find something, someone fascinating. You know, if you say, I love my car, it means you find your car fascinating. You're like, wow, it's got this feature of heated seats. And I mean, the car I'm using right now, it's got this really cool feature where a sunshade, can be put up mechanically in the back window. But as soon as you're backing up, it automatically goes down. Then when you go forward, it automatically goes up again. It's like, oh, that's so cool, you know. Whatever. You have something fascinates us. Something fascinates us about our car or our phone. What to speak of a living being? You know, we're fascinated by our pet hamster or by our child or, you know, by our spouse, which fascinated. We could just watch them and think about them. And then not only are we fascinated, but we what we love is of value to us. We care. You know, we say things like, I'm missing you. The whole concept of separation being anguish is based on this concept that the who or what we love is valuable. You know, when Krishna was in Kaliya's coils, the residents of Vrindavan, they practically couldn't live. And Prabhupada explains that they had invested everything in Krishna. You know, just like in the stock market crash in 1928, I think it was, there were people committing suicide because they had invested everything in the stock market, which was going down. So this is showing value. Love is that we value someone. They're important to us. And then love is demonstrated in the fact that we're there for them. We have their back. They have our back. We have their back. That we are Krishna's friend. Not only do we see that Krishna is our friend, but that we're there for him. We're rendering service to him. We want to help him in his mission. We defend him if somebody blasphemes him, and so forth. And, you know, gratitude. Well, gratitude for, on the material level, for our air, for our water, for our food, for our friends. Gratitude on the spiritual level for Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual masters, for the Association of Devotees, for the Shastra, for this Kevalananda Kanda process of bhakti in this Kali Yuga. So many things to be grateful for. And gratitude is one of the items of knowledge. It's one of the 14 items of knowledge that, and it's in the Panchatantra. There are stories about that the worst person is one who is ungrateful. And I think we, again, experience this ourselves when we do something. You know, I'm just remembering many years ago, we had our Gurukula in Detroit, and we would have regular meetings with the parents, and one of the parents said, you know, you don't communicate enough with the parents. And I said, well, we send out a regular newsletter from the school to communicate with the parents. And she said, oh, who has time to read that? So, you know, it's then you feel lack of gratitude. You know, your authority in ISKCON asks you, you know, can you please do some research? And you gather a team and you research for a month and you write a 30-page paper of research. And then the very person who commissioned the research says, oh, I don't have time to read a 30-page paper. Give me a one-paragraph summary, you know. And you're like, you know, why should I do this? You know, why should I do this? If nobody's grateful, you feel hurt, you feel pain, right? It's kind of this, I don't know, I get this kind of feeling of curling up inside when you do a lot of work for somebody and they're just like, I don't care about this. So that's how Krishna feels. Prabhupada said, don't depress Krishna. He said, if you go to a beautiful garden and you don't appreciate it, the gardener will be depressed. He said, so don't depress Krishna. Don't say the world is false or hate the world. But one should appreciate everything in gratitude. All right, but those are feelings. How do we demonstrate that? You know, all this like touchy-feely stuff. How do we actually demonstrate love? What does it mean practically? So here, interestingly enough, and significantly enough, love for the Lord is demonstrated in how we treat other living beings. If we only treat Him nicely and we don't treat other living beings nicely, we don't show our love for Him. Now, this point should not be misunderstood, that our only service to the Lord is in service to other living beings. This idea that service to man is service to God has been very much distorted into saying that ordinary philanthropy and charity is spiritual in and of itself. So that is also a mistake. You know, in a family where there's two spouses and children, love for the spouse is shown to love by love to the children. And this point tends to be a problem when there's step-parents. I mean, not always, but there's a tendency. We see this problem with Dhruva Maharaj and his family. Of course, the step-parents were through polygamy rather than divorce and remarriage. But the principle's very similar, that the step-parent, in this case, Suruchi, saw Uttanapada's love for Dhruva as a threat to her relationship with her husband. So you have a situation where a step-parent will see the biological parent's love for the child from the other spouse as a threat to them. Therefore, Prabhupada says you become an enemy by remarrying in the presence of children. And this is particularly true if the other biological parent of the children is still living. So having said that, I mean, again, that's not true in all cases by any means, but it seems to be a general tendency. Having said that, if the parents are both biological, the biological parents of the children, particularly, and in some cases with step-parents, the mother is very happy when the husband is kind to the children. She sees that as love of her, and the husband is very happy when he sees his wife taking nice care of the children. But if that was all that happened, let's say the wife takes very nice care of the children at the expense of taking care of her husband, or the husband takes nice care of the children at the expense of taking care of his wife. And you see that in some families. You see in some families where one of the parents puts the children as number one and the spouse is number two. There becomes a disturbance in the family that ends up affecting the children. So the love for the children, it should be an extension of the love for the spouse. And when it's done that way, the spouse is very happy that the children are cared for. And indeed, the spouse would not be happy if they were cared for and the children were neglected. So a man would not be happy if his wife served him well and neglected the children. A wife would not be happy if the husband served her well and neglected the children. So Krishna also feels like this. It's not that we should serve other living entities and neglect him in the name of loving him, but nor should we serve him and neglect other living entities. And therefore, there are these two principles, like Bhaktivinoda said, Namruchi and Jivadvaya. I mean, in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the impersonals have to be kind to other living entities. And this point is made very strongly in this part of the Bhagavatam. There's one verse where Lord Kapiladev says, if you make an offering to a fire, but you're not kind to living entities, it's like you're making offering into ashes. And Jesus said something similar. He said, if you bring your offering to the altar, but you have a quarrel with your brother, put down your offering, settle your quarrel with your brother, and then come back and make your offering. And the mad elephant offense is to be disrespectful, to be offensive, to be blasphemous, especially to other devotees of the Lord. But ultimately, everyone's a devotee. Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nitya Dhamsa. We should not be disrespectful to anybody. We should always respect everyone. Everyone deserves equal respect. Equal doesn't mean exactly the same. But everyone is equally entitled to respect and dignity. Again, that will manifest differently according to a host of factors. But it's not, you know, there's this mood in America, you know, Black Lives Matter. It's a fact. All lives matter. It's not really that one life matters more than another in terms of respect and dignity. It's not a fact. Respect has to be shown to all living entities. And without that, we will not progress in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter how strict and pukka we are. Mahaprabhu said it's like a mad elephant. Mad elephant, most of us don't experience mad elephants. Most of us don't even experience elephants. But when elephants were used extensively instead of machinery, so elephants have a particular... some particular things about elephants that are not found in the rest of the animal kingdom. And one of them especially is what's called must. So, as we know, in many species of life, the female of the species has a time of fertility called heat, when she becomes particularly sexually attractive to the males. But generally the males don't have any such time. But among elephants, they do. Now, a male elephant can reproduce at any time, but bull elephants also have a circumstance called must. And must can last anywhere from a few weeks to even a few months. And the bull elephant becomes not only hyper-sexualized, but also hyper-aggressive. And there's all kinds of symptoms. There's a liquid called temperin that starts pouring out of their forehead, and they have urine leaking constantly. Their thighs are always wet with urine. And what's interesting about a bull elephant in must is that they seem to become not only highly aggressive, but they're highly sensitive. So that if you touch them, they think you're going to kill them, and they may turn around and kill you, even if you're their beloved mahout that raised them from a baby. I mean, generally, elephants remember anyone who was ever kind to them, and they're extremely grateful. But a bull in must will kill anybody, even a very dear person. And any noise just aggravates them, like anything. They're very easily offended. They're also fearless. So a young bull in must will challenge even an older bull who has a big harem. And indeed, that feature is the theory behind scientists as to why the elephants go into must, that it allows the young bulls who otherwise would not have a chance to mate with the cows. And the bull in must will just destroy anything. They just rampage through the forest, through villages, through gardens. Everything is just destroyed in their path. They will challenge the biggest bull elephants. They will kill even those who are dear to them. They are more or less crazy. So this disrespect to living entities acts like an elephant in must that just destroys the garden of bhakti. It's basically the only thing that will really destroy the garden of bhakti. Other things may dampen it for some time or whatever, but they don't destroy it. But this elephant in must, and when Mahaprabhu said that, people in those days were quite familiar. You know, the wild elephants, of course, the bulls go into must periodically. But even among the domesticated elephants, what they do with the domesticated elephants traditionally is as soon as the mahout notices the beginning signs of must, they immediately cut the elephant's food and water down to almost nothing. And if they do that, then everything passes in a couple days and it never becomes full-fledged must. Today, elephant keepers consider that a cruel habit and they lock the elephant in some heavy-duty cage for what may be months. I would think the first is a little bit more humane. But anyway, the principle is that we should starve our tendency to be disrespectful. As soon as we notice the slightest inclination for disrespect or envy, and if we're conditioned souls, that tendency for envy, criticism, and disrespect is going to be there. But as soon as we notice it, we need to be alert, like the elephant keeper is alert. And they know the beginning signs of the bull and must. You know, they want to use bull elephants. They don't want to use only the female elephants. The bulls tend to have longer tusks and be stronger, and they're useful for a lot of work. It's not that they're not useful. But they have to be alert. And at the same time, you know, we don't want to. I see devotees say, well, I'm offensive. Let me just avoid the association of devotees. No. But we need to be alert to this tendency to criticize. Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion that if one blasphemes devotees, he may have a chance to finish his bhakti, but he'll take birth in a low family. And I thought maybe that's what happened to a lot of us who took up bhakti again in this life, but we were born in a low family. We see a tendency among, you know, especially in this Kali Yuga, where people fight over nothing, like an elephant in must. It gets angry if you just touch it with a feather or you just whisper in its presence. And Kali Yuga is like that. So over nothing, we become offended, and becoming offended, we attack other devotees. So we should be, it's such an important point. We cannot emphasize it enough. We shouldn't offend anybody. We shouldn't, you know, we have to starve our crazy elephant. We've got to starve our crazy elephant. As soon as we notice the craziness in our elephants, and we got to just stop giving food and water. and let the thing pass. Let the urge to be disrespectful pass. And it's such, I mean, we talk often about how we're going to spread Krishna consciousness in the world. And from my perspective, one of the main reasons we're not spreading our movement and the Sankirtan Yajna as far as we could or should is that we publicly pummel each other. You know, somebody looks up Krishna consciousness, they're going to run into some kind of public controversy where people are getting into name-calling, and oh, it's just so ugly, and you just say, why do I want to be a part of this? You know, I was coming to a sangha for a while, and with so many sanghas, not all of them, but with so many sanghas, it's full of politics and backbiting and criticism and character assassination, and people are in fear as to, you know, who's going to challenge my loyalty and my, oh, it's just so unpalatable. So even from the point of view of preaching, so from the point of view of pleasing Krishna and actually showing love, from the point of view of our own progress, from the point of view of our preaching, you know, and if we're disrespectful to other living entities, we will not be feeling the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. We just won't. Because Krishna's not pleased. And we'll be going through the motions and we can pat ourselves on the back with what a strict devotee we are. But everything will be dry. And then in that dryness, we're Ananda Maya Vyasat. We're pleasure-seeking beings. What are we going to do to get our pleasure in that dryness? You know, then you find devotees getting back into gross and subtle sense gratification because they're not finding the pleasure in bhakti. Or they may take pleasure in materially perverted rasas of anger and ghastliness. People end up taking pleasure in their blasphemy and their disrespect. Wow, you know, I'm smashing this person and bashing this person. And they're actually enjoying how disrespectful they are. I'm doing this in the name of purifying the movement or whatever, you know. It's my service to be disrespectful. So it's such an important point. It's so much emphasized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These verses of Lord Kapila, I think, are some of the strongest in the Bhagavatam as far as, you know, you don't respect other living entities, you're not kind to other living entities, you're making an offering into ashes. You got everything perfect, you know, all your ducks are in a row, but you ain't going anywhere. And it's just so difficult, I think, especially for us in Kali Yuga, just to be like decent human beings. And then Prabhupada goes beyond just showing respect, but he goes to engaging people in service. And I think it's so interesting that Prabhupada focuses on food in this purport. Kapila Dev is talking about all the items of archana, but Prabhupada's focusing on food. And he's saying, don't just make an offering and then eat, but also distribute the prasadam to other living entities. And this is a very practical way of showing respect. Very practical. All glories to the devotees even do that from their home. Right? They're always, not only are they cooking, but they're always distributing the prasadam. And this is our main way of showing respect to living entities. It's not just a question of, you know, not blaspheming people and being nice to people, opening doors for people and things like that, which is basic human behavior, but also taking our Krishna consciousness and sharing it. Whatever it may be, whether it's the prasadam, whether it's the flowers, whether it's our knowledge, whether it's, you know, something to share Krishna consciousness, because this is the main way that we show respect to other living entities. We respect them as a soul. It doesn't mean we shouldn't respect them on the external level. But in addition to respecting them on the external level, not in place of, in addition to respecting them on the external level, we should respect them on the spiritual level. And the way we respect them on the spiritual level is we respect their eternal nature of being Krishna's devotee, and we find a way to encourage and enliven them in Krishna consciousness. We give them the prasadam, not just literally in the form of halva, but in the form of anything that will enliven them. Anything that will enliven them. I mean, even if it's prasadam, we should be giving them prasadam that enlivens them. Right? Something where they feel attached, where they feel encouraged, where they feel enthused in Krishna consciousness. And that enlivenment is crucial. Then we actually respect them. So this is such a simple, elegant, beautiful way to love the Lord. Yes, worship the Lord according to the rules. Get the secondary things in line. Don't feed the mad elephant. Don't give that mad elephant any food and water. And show respect to other living entities on all levels, not only on the normal level, but also by distributing the mercy of the Lord. By distributing the mercy of the Lord to enliven people, to enthuse people, to give people not just, you know, the sweet taste of halva, but the sweet taste of the holy name, the sweet taste of the Bhagavatam. And that's love. That's love for Krishna. And if we deal with others that way, then our following will bear fruit very quickly and very wonderfully. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements.
What did you mean by giving prasadam that enlivens?
Well, recently I visited a Hare Krishna temple with some family members, and one of the family members is not a devotee and hasn't gone to any kind of Hare Krishna temple or event for many years. And when we went to this Hare Krishna temple, all of the prasadam was overspiced with chilies, badly spiced, badly cooked, very greasy. There wasn't anything other than the salad, which was nicely done. And the prasadam was being sold, so they had to pay for the prasadam, and yet it was all substandard. So they didn't finish what was on their plate. And there were children also in the group, and the children wouldn't eat anything. So one of the devotees said, oh, we have a little garden in the back. You can take the children to the garden. So this non-devotee family member took the children to the garden, and I went outside 5 minutes later, and they had been thrown out of the garden because the children were going on the grass, although there was no sign to keep off the grass. And so they said, oh, I think we're going to go home now. And they didn't stay for the program. So that's what I mean. we should be distributing prasadam that is going to be, first of all, it should be nicely prepared. And then it should be something that is going to be attractive to the people to whom we're distributing it. So that requires some sensitivity to local customs and so forth. You know, if you're going to be with people who aren't used to eating hot chilies, then you probably shouldn't be putting... I mean, I went to one temple a couple years ago where everything at the Sunday feast had chilies in it. Even the plain rice had chilies in it. And it was just... there was nothing to eat. You went to the Sunday feast and there was just nothing to eat at all. So, and then, yes, we should serve people according to their particular taste. Ask them, what do you like? And don't just say to them, you know, well, you have to eat this because it's prasadam, especially if they're not even a devotee. Yeah. Anything else?
I thought that's where you're going to go with the answer.
Yes. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, go ahead.
Kyle, be here. So, this is kind of, I don't quite don't know how to word this question, but when you mentioned about that Krishna, if our offering of prasad, of foodstuff isn't with love, then Krishna doesn't accept it, and it's not prasadam. I mean, that's what you said, right? In the purple.
Well, I didn't say that. No.
Please clarify then, so I make sure I understand clearly.
Okay, so I didn't say it's not prasadam. What we're supposed to do on the level of beginners in Vaidhi Bhakti is we're supposed to go through the rituals given in the scripture for the offering of food. And what we do is we ask our spiritual master who has love to offer it. We're basically assisting the guru. And therefore, it's still prasadam because the guru offers it. But you know what? It does. The mood of the cook does make a difference. It's not that it's irrelevant. And I think we've all seen that practically. So if the person who's cooking and the person who's offering is doing things just ritualistically and just in a formal way, saying to their spiritual master, you please offer this, it's not quite the same. It's not that there's like an on-off switch. We're talking about a continuum here. And the quality of the prasadam is not always the same. It just isn't. You know, it depends on their quality of the ingredients isn't always the same. But the quality of the love of the person cooking and growing the food and making the offering, it does make a difference. It's not irrelevant. You know, that's why we say that we should only offer things cooked by devotees and so forth. You know, these things, the person even who grows the food, these things are not irrelevant as far as Krishna's pleasure with the offering. But that doesn't mean that for somebody who's a beginner and doesn't have much of any feelings, that they can't be offering through the guru and Krishna accepting. So again, it's not an on-off switch. And as I said in the beginning of the class, just doing the behavior itself, even though without much feeling in the beginning, will spark those feelings. So going through the motion acts as a keystone behavior which starts to change our emotions. And we shouldn't have the mood that, well, I'm not going to offer my food until I have love. By offering one's food even mechanically, that love will begin to develop. However, if we want that love to develop quickly, we should not only be offering food to the Lord, but we should also be pleasing all living entities. Now, even if I'm doing that mechanically, even if I'm saying, okay, well, you know, I really only care about myself and my spiritual advancement, so I'm going to distribute prasadam because I know that Krishna likes it and that's what I'm supposed to do. So even if you're doing that mechanically, well, I'm just not going to disrespect anybody mechanically because Krishna likes it. So by doing that, even on a mechanical level, that behavior will start to awaken the natural feelings within the soul. So it's not just mechanical Vaidhi Bhakti is not useless at all. I mean, the Krishna gives us in the 12th chapter, you know, serve me always with love. If you can't do that, practice having love. If you can't do that, just work for me. So these things are not useless. But we shouldn't try to stay on that platform. That's the point. The point is not that platform is useless. The point is that one should progress from that. You know, learning your ABCs are useful, but if you never learn how to put the ABCs together into words and read them, you know, in and of it themselves, they're not useful. But they're useful as a starting point. Or like, you know, in mathematics, why do we learn equivalent fractions? Learning equivalent fractions in and of itself has no value. But without learning equivalent fractions, you can't learn how to add and subtract fractions with unlike denominators. You know, yesterday I had to add a half a cup in a recipe to 1 1/3 cup. You know, so I had to find equivalent fractions. But again, the baseline of finding equivalent fractions, if you don't use it to add and subtract numbers with unlike denominators, in and of itself it doesn't have any value. So if we just stay on the platform of mechanically following rules without any feeling, if we stay on that platform, the value is very small. But that platform is the foundation upon which everything else becomes built. So I hope that clarifies. Thank you for asking that question. We have time for one more.
in light of that, Maharaj, this is part of it. In light of what you just said, I did have a couple of questions, but time factor is reality for me too. But in light of what you just said, mechanical methods by which so many of us go through our devotional service, it goes into the question, why should I do this if I'm not going to take it beyond this? It would appear to me that even if it's mechanical, not that I'm trying to defend myself, but even if it's mechanical, the solution is to maintain the service.
Yes, well, but not only to maintain the service, but also to make some effort to have it be more meaningful. You know, there should be some effort. And here I see the word gratitude is one way that we can make that effort. You know, I may not be feeling love right now, but how hard is it to feel gratitude? That takes 20 seconds of attention to feel gratitude. You know, just 20 seconds of attention.
Yeah. It would seem to me that it would be almost impossible to maintain anything for any extended period of time unless there was some feeling that was coming up.
That's also a very good point. You know, well, you can be getting some material rasa from it. So you can, a person can maintain mechanical worship because others are praising them, or as a way to feel superior to others, or because that way they're getting room and board. So there may be some kind of perverted material rasa that a person is getting from long-term mechanical service to the Lord. That is entirely possible. You can't go on without some kind of rasa, but you can be, people can go on being strict as an excuse for blaspheming others who aren't as strict as they are. And they're getting their rasa from the perversion of anger and ghastliness. So that's entirely possible for somebody to be getting their rasa that way, although it's very unsatisfying.
Well, I wasn't really thinking in terms of that per se, because I could say for myself, whatever faults I may have, I wasn't motivated to come to Krishna consciousness because of, you know, some material thrill out of life or, you know, satisfaction. But because I really wanted to find out, I wanted to understand what is life, what is the meaning of life, what should I do with my life?
The curiosity one. So we have the four reasons, the curiosity reason.
Yes, ma'am. So, but again, from that perspective, it's just, what am I trying to say here, that if that is my motive for coming to Krishna consciousness, and that doesn't go away, and unless that curiosity is being gratified somewhere, that I'm actually gaining something, even if I'm still just on a mechanical platform of trying to do some devotional service, because when I look at the opposite, when I look at the alternatives, what is there? What alternative is there that exists to being a devotee, even if I can only perform on a mechanical level?
But that's a kind of satisfaction, isn't it? I think that is a kind of rush of satisfaction with your service, and I think that's a kind of gratitude. If you look at everything else and say, what's the alternative, then you're saying, I'm really grateful for what I have, and that is gratitude.
Yes, that's true.
That definitely is gratitude. And that's why I say I think gratitude is not that hard. Maybe we can't come up with love, but we can sure come up with gratitude. It's a 20 seconds of meditation to feel some gratitude in our service. I do need to go now. I have a program here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.